Good evening. Thank you all for coming tonight. We are going to do something that is very ambitious, or we'll try to do it. I shouldn't say that we will do it. We will try. And that is, we are going to try to give some sort of overview on Rashi's commentary on Chumash. Right? Last week, we spoke about Rashi the person, when Rashi lived, etc., who his teachers were. And Rashi wrote a commentary on Chumash, which is probably the best-known work of Rashi. We do not know when Rashi wrote his commentary on Chumash vis-a-vis his other commentaries. Did Rashi write his commentary on Gemara first? Did he write his commentary on Chumash first? Right? We just don't know. Again, in Grossman's book, which is called Rashi, that we're spending a lot of time with. He's becoming our friend. So the first note he has in the chapter on the commentary on the Torah is there's no evidence for chronology of Rashi's works. Now, when I say this, this is an interesting point because Lubavitchers are known to sometimes be ahistorical. No? The Friedrich Rebbe, the Rebbe Rayatz, had like a whole approach to history that wasn't like so into history. And Lubavitchers are convinced, for some reason, that Rashi wrote his commentary on Chumash all the way at the end of his career. But there's really no evidence for that. So we don't know when Rashi wrote his commentary on Chumash, but one thing we do know is it was written some point before 1105 because he died in 1105. So far, so good? Now, Rashi is known as the commentator par excellence on Chumash. He is known as the big shmigegi, or whatever the official term is. He is the ideal commentator on Chumash. And in the book that Mosad Harav Kook put out, in honor of Rashi's, I think, 850th birthday, or 850th death day, I should say, when Mosad Harav Kook put out this book, because Rashi died in 1105, so 850 years after that would be 1190, right? And wait, 11, whatever it is, right? So, 19, what? Yeah, 1955, right? Something like that. So when Mosad Harav Kook put out this book, right at the beginning of the book, they published a poem that they say is a poem attributed to Reb Avram ben Ezra about the greatness of Rashi. And that's the first source I give you here, right? A poem that's attributed to Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra lived 1089 to 1164. Now, Ibn Ezra is the first commentator who saw Rashi, who knew Rashi, who quotes Rashi. Right? What's interesting about Rashi on Chumash, okay, before we kind of get into this poem, is who wrote the first commentary on the Gemara? Who?
Rashi?
No! First commentary on the Gemara predates Rashi. Right? When Rashi sat down to write a commentary on the Gemara, he had commentaries from Rabbeinu Gershom Ma'ar HaGola. He had commentaries from a whole school in Mainz, etc. Right? Commentaries on Gemara were written. Who wrote the first commentary on Chumash? Well, the first commentary on Chumash, obviously Unklus is a commentary on Chumash. But let's go post-Tanaitic. Okay? In Gaonim, the first commentary on Chumash is... There are lots of commentaries in Chumash and Gaon, a few of them, but we have a complete commentary from Reb Sadia Gaon on all of Chumash, right? So we have Gaonic commentaries. But in medieval Europe, in Ashkenaz, the first commentary on Chumash is Rashi. So the first commentary on Gemara in Ashkenaz is not Rashi, no? But on Chumash it is Rashi. And when you think about it, the idea to write a commentary on Chumash is fascinating, because I understand why I need a commentary on Gemara. Because if I open up a piece of Gemara, I say, what the heck does this mean? No? And I slam it closed. I say, I don't know what's going on. So I realize I need a commentary when I open a Gemara, correct? But when I open the Chumash, do I realize I need a commentary? Not really. No? Most often, in Chumash, you can translate the words without the commentaries. You can probably, most people, if you can't translate the word, you ask somebody, you ask a teacher. It's not as complicated. The need for a commentary is less obvious. So when Rashi writes a commentary on Chumash, right, the first one in Ashkenaz, this is really big stuff. And Moshe Rav Kook publishes this poem from the Ibn Ezra, Kochav darach mitzarfata machane arach al yatvata. A star comes from France, and it encamped in this area, shalom ba'ohutz va'omisinai, omitzinata, mi'ita'el, mi'kuti'el, ba'kishmu'el, mi'ramata, arko someba, kotzama nofet, mei mitkan shata. Right? Blind people can see with its light. Right? Anyone who is thirsty can drink sweet things from it. Perush nora samla Torah al kein nikra parshandata. He made an awesome commentary on Torah, therefore he is called parshandata. And comes along Mosad Rav Kook, and they have this poem, and they say, oh my gosh, the Ibn Ezra himself is calling Rashi parshandata, which means commentator extraordinaire. The most amazing, right? Perush Naora Samla Torah made an amazing, awesome commentary on Torah. Al Kein Nikra Parshandata. Therefore, he is called Parshandata. And they said, oh my gosh, right? Ibn Ezra. Now, you realize that Ibn Ezra quotes Rashi by name a few times, but he is disagreeing with Rashi because Ibn Ezra feels that Rashi doesn't know Hebrew that well. No? Ibn Ezra is very into literal meanings. And he says, hey, Rashi, dude, like, you know, you're giving me all this medrash, fuzzy medrash, like presidential debates, fuzzy math, stuff like that. You're giving me fuzzy stuff. I want text. But the great Ibn Ezra recognized that Rashi's parshandata is commentator extraordinaire. So this is, Moshe Rav Kook says, amazing find, great.
It seems to me that Sunday Chumash, before you need a commentary, you need a dictionary. Was there a dictionary from Hebrew into Ashkenaz or
into German. Into French? No, not that I'm aware of. I mean, Rashi, very often in his commentary, serves as our first dictionary. When Rashi gives us those old French words that we don't know what they mean, because most of us don't speak old French, right? But that's what Rashi's doing. I'm not aware of a dictionary beforehand. Again, there are certain words that are hard to understand, but generally speaking, you could figure it out from context or from parallels in the text itself. Correct. The first commentary on Chumash is Rashi, first in Ashkenaz. By the way, and Reb Sadia is not nearly as complete a commentary as Rashi is. Notice all the earlier commentaries. So Rashi is really charting new ground. So again, so they say we have this poem, Ibn Ezra quotes Rashi Parshandata. A few problems. I have an article that I brought by Ephraim Orbach. Right? It's printed in this book called Rashi, 1040 to 1990, Hommage à Ephraim et Orbach, Congrès européen des études juives. Right? The European Congress of Jewish Studies, right? Those of you who speak my French is as bad as my Yiddish. So Orbach, in this book, basically has an article called How Did Rashi Merit the Title Parshandata? How did Rashi become the great commentator? And he makes a few points. First of all, this poem is probably not Ibn Ezra. This poem is found in whatever the library, wherever it is, and he speaks to people who found the only source, Professor Ezra Fleischer, found that the only Oxford manuscript of this is Neubauer, 1986. This Oxford manuscript of this poem is attributed to Ibn Ezra because generally copyists would attribute any medieval Jewish poem that they didn't know who wrote to Ibn Ezra because he was the only poet they heard of. So it's probably not Ibn Ezra. Point one. Point two. There's a line in the middle, Mi'itiel v'kutiel ba'kishmuel me'ramata. He came like Shmuel. Some assume that he's talking about Shmuel, which is the commentary of the Rashbam, not the commentary of the Rashi. Rashbam was Shmuel, that was his name. So it's probably not referring to Rashi. It's probably not written by Ibn Ezra, but what we say is good try. Moreover, the Ibn Ezra himself hated Rashi. Ibn Ezra has, right, an introduction to one of his books, where Ibn Ezra basically says, Rashi, right? Rashi, like, he don't know what's going on over here. Rashi's reputation, again, in Grossman's book, pages 45, etc., going on, he talks about the way Rashi's commentary was received in Spain. Ibn Ezra's the first one. But Ibn Ezra really does not like Rashi. In his introduction to the book Safa Brura, Ibn Ezra describes the commentary of Rashi as being far removed from plain meaning of the text, right? He thinks it's on the path of plain meaning. His books lack even one plain meaning interpretation out of 1,000. Right? Dem's fighting words. It's probably not Ibn Ezra. Okay, now, Ibn Ezra didn't like Rashi. Among Spanish Mefarshim, afterwards, the Ramban really does like Rashi. The Ramban writes in his Hakdama to Chumash, right, that va'asim lim ar panai neiros hamenora hatahora perushei rabbeinu shlomo ateres tzifi utzifiras tif'ara. I would put to my eyes the comments of the great light Rashi, muchtab ni musay b'mikra b'mishnah b'gemara lo mishpat habchura b'dvara ve'ge b'avatam eshke v'imahem yelanu masamatan drisha v'chakira. He says Rashi has the birthright. Lo mishpat habchura. He is the first among commentators. Ramban really likes Rashi. Now, why does the Ramban like Rashi and the Ibn Ezra not? So this has to do with your approach to life. Ibn Ezra is into simple meaning of words. Rashi don't do as much of that as Ibn Ezra would like. The Ramban is a bit of a Kabbalist. There is a tradition. Ready? Tradition. We spoke about traditions last time we learned. Tradition. Rashi fasted 613 times before he wrote his commentary on the Chumash. Tradition from the Shlach HaKadosh. Rashi's commentary on Chumash contains deep Kabbalistic secrets. If you believe this Kabbalistic, I don't know the right term to finish that sentence, heebie-jeebie, hooah, whatever, if you believe this stuff, then you could draw a line and say, oh, the Ramban and Rashi, there's an affinity. Why? Because...
they wrote in the same style.
What?
They wrote in the same style.
They wrote a similar style. The Ramban is much longer than Rashi, but... that is, okay, fine. Now, another point. In later generations, you know, we have an obligation to learn Chumash each week. Gemara Brachos Daf Ches. Chayav Adam, right, liknot et ha-parsha, shnayi mikra ve'echad targum. You have to finish the parsha with the tzibur. You're supposed to review the parsha every week. It says in Shulchan Aruch, from the Tur, that if you have Yiras Shamayim, right, then you will read the parasha with Rashi. Rashi made it. Rashi, and by the way, I would argue that learning the parasha with Rashi is probably better for us than learning the parasha with Unklus, because most of us have difficulty with Unklus's Aramaic. Rashi, right? First of all, there's so many good translations of Rashi. Rashi made it. Not only did Rashi make it, there are more manuscripts of Rashi than there are of Rashi on Chumash than there are of Rashi on Gemara. There's only 3 manuscripts known of Rashi on Gemara. There are dozens of manuscripts of Rashi on Chumash. First printed Hebrew book. What year?
1490.
Earlier? Close. 1475. What was that book? Rashi. The first book written in Hebrew letters is Rashi.
Not the Siddur.
First printed book in Hebrew letters. Printed, not handwritten. Rashi. Well, the Gutenberg Bible was not only Hebrew letters. It had Hebrew and other languages. The first exclusive Hebrew book, right, is Rashi. By the way, the first three exclusively published in Moritz Steinschneider's listing of published books, 1, 2, and 3 are Rashi. Do you get a sense that this book is really important? Okay. A contemporary of Rashi in Italy is quoting Rashi. That's a point that is made right here in an article by Iran Wiesel, the secret of the popularity of Rashi's commentary on the Torah. Right, this came out by Brill Press. That's like in Leiden. So in this article, he quotes that the Sefer Rushina is a contemporary of Rashi in the south of Italy. He quotes Rashi. Now that, by the way, is amazing. Because stuff did not travel quickly in the year 1105. So to get from Troyes to southern Italy in his lifetime, Herzog Zu, right, that's impressive. Rashi makes it to Yemen 100 years after his death. Yemen is till this very day the cultural backwater of the planet. If you could turn this one on, it will help. Thank you. Right? Isn't Yemen the cultural backwater? Yemen and Afghanistan are like fighting about who's more backward. Am I right about this? Huh? I think Yemen, right? Yemen! Rashi, 100 years after his death. We have manuscripts. Right? Rashi makes it. Now, the only thing about Rashi, and this is a point that Rashi scholars talk about, and then we'll start really learning in a few minutes. The only thing about Rashi is, when I take out Rashi on Chumash, I can't be sure that what I'm reading is Rashi. I'm sorry for bursting your bubble, ladies and gentlemen. I can't be sure what I'm reading is Rashi. Why not? I'll tell you why, for a few reasons. One reason is that Rashi's students, Rabbeinu Shemaya, the Rashbam, the Rabbeinu Tam, right? Rashi's students were very attached to what their teacher wrote. And they added their own ideas to the text of Rashi. So, yeah, you would think that like they'd have like respect for the golden language of Rashi, and it's not clear how much of our Rashi is real Rashi. Let me explain to you one other thing. After Rashi's grandson, Rabbeinu Tam, decided to put a cherem. Now, by the way, cherem means, ready, drop dead. Cherem means you get this curse that should enter your 248 limbs and you should drop dead. It's a powerful curse. That's what a cherem is. There's a cherem that Rabbeinu Tam said not to amend the texts in the book itself, only to make amendations, only to make corrections on the margins. Right? Isn't this a standard thing that, like, I see something which doesn't seem right in the Sefer, I don't take out my pen and just cross it out and write a new thing? No. Right, you write it on the side. But Rabbeinu Tam, when he made this cherem, he's quoting, by the way, an older cherem of the Gaonim, but he points out that my teacher Rashi used to make corrections on the text itself. Not only did Rashi make corrections on the text itself, but Grossman points out that Rashi was a great teacher. And great teachers encourage their students to be independent. And great teachers have a way of praising their students. Right? And the Beis Medrash of Rashi was this happening place, and they have a lot of stuff going on. In Grossman's book, he gives you a list of the types of works. Maybe we'll talk about this next week. Types of works that Rashi's students wrote, all under the tutelage of Rashi. Commentaries on the Bible, commentaries on Mishnah, commentaries on liturgical poem, responsa, halachic monographs, prayer books, midrashic literature, liturgical poetry, grammar, history, astronomy, astrology. It's a happening place. These stones of Rashi are happening. And Rashi praises them. We'll see in a few minutes a quote that one of Rashi's students says that my teacher praised me. So now, if you know that your teacher himself makes changes in the text, and your teacher says, you know what, that's a really good idea. You know what you're going to do? You're going to take out your quill, and you're going to say, oh, that's a good idea. Let me cross out what I have over here and write my thing. Or let me add it into the text. So when I have manuscripts of Rashi, and there's many, many, many manuscripts of Rashi, they are not the same. I have dozens of manuscripts of Rashi, and I compare them, and like, what the heck? Right? It don't say that over here, no? Right? Sarah Kamin has a book. You know the famous Rashi about how all the stones had a fight when Yaakov Avinu goes to sleep and they have a fight, right, that the tzaddik should be, right, should have his head on me, etc. You know that that is not found in most manuscripts of Rashi? What does that mean? I don't know what it means. I'm not sure. I can't tell you. But I can never be sure what is Rashi and what is not Rashi. The best manuscript of Rashi, they say, is one manuscript called Leipzig number 1. Leipzig number 1, they say, is the best manuscript of Rashi. Okay, wonderful, great. Why they assume it's the best? Because they assume it's the oldest. But we really don't know. We really do not know. Okay? So now, what we have is this book called Rashi. It spreads like wildfire. It takes over the Jewish world. In his lifetime, it's quoted. Right? It spreads wide and far. He is known, in later generations at least, even Ibn Ezra didn't say it, but in later generations, everyone calls Rashi Parshandata, the great commentary. What makes Rashi's commentary the greatest? Why is Rashi better than any other commentary?
Concision.
Huh?
Concision.
It's concise. Okay. So it's first. It's short. What else? The language is very, very easy to write. Very easy to read. Yeah. What else? Some say what makes Rashi the greatest commentator is just the scope of what he wrote on. No? That here's a man who wrote on all of Chumash, Navi, Gemara, right? Maybe having their conditioner on wasn't such a good idea. Right? Here's a man who wrote on everything. So maybe that's why Rashi is the greatest commentator in terms of magnitude. Perhaps. But there is an argument that this fellow, Iran Wiesel, he's a professor in professor in Ben Gurion University in Be'er Sheva, right? And Iran Wiesel makes an argument that the reason why Rashi is Parshandata is connected to the programmatic statement that we see here in Rashi in Bereshis Gimel Ches. Now, let's just take a step back. Rashi has it. Where, if you'd be writing a commentary on Chumash, where would you put your programmatic statement? Where would I tell you what I'm doing with my commentary? Right at the beginning, no? Right. Is that what makes sense?
Yes.
Where does Rashi put it? Chapter 3, verse 8. No? You would think it would be Genesis 1:1 rather than Genesis 3:8. So now, Rashi over here comments, right? And you could see it. I give it to you both in Hebrew and in English. There are many different midrashic explanations. Our teachers have already collected them in their appropriate places in Genesis Rabbah and other midrashim. I, however, am only concerned with the plain sense of the scripture and with such agadot that explain words of the scripture in a manner that fits with them. Okay? So Rashi says that there are many different midrashim. I came for the simple meaning of the pasuk. Now,
Yeah, but
Rashi says,
Ibn Ezra would disagree.
So Ibn Ezra first would say, Rashi, you call that simple meaning? Fuff! Right? That's not simple meaning. Right? One point. And Ibn Ezra probably is right. Because Rashi quotes many different Midrashim all the time, no? Rashi quotes that the pit that Yosef is thrown into has snakes and scorpions in it. Is that simple meaning of the text?
No.
Rashi quotes that the... What?
Ain bo mayim.
Yeah.
So there's got to be something.
Right? You sense the problem.
Right?
Rashi has many, 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 probably hundreds if not thousands of Midrashim that he quotes that might not be to a reasonable ear what we would call Pshuto Shel Mikra. So what's going on, Rashi? What are you doing? What are you telling me that you are giving Pshuto Shel Mikra? So in the Wiesel's article... So in that case, a clear textual thing. Let's give you some other ones. The pasuk says that Cham comes to his father Noach, right? And right, they go into the tent where Noach is laying down. And Rashi comments that what Cham did is he castrated his father. Find that in the text, ladies and gentlemen, right? Vushteit. Right, it's kind of disgusting. I agree. Right? Well, what's going on here? Right? Why is Rashi quoting these midrashim that seem to use a Yiddish word, far-fetched? They seem far-fetched. What's going on? So, Iran Wiesel argues that the reason why Rashi is the greatest commentator is what Rashi does is he gives us Agada hamiyashevet divrei hamikra davar davor al ofanav. He gives me an agada that explains the language of the pasuk. Meaning, Rashi does not give me a list of midrashim. Rashi tells me, you know what? I have compilations of midrashim elsewhere, but what I will give you is agada hamiyashevet. Divrei HaMikra. I'll give you the Agadah that explains the Pasuk. So Rashi is taking the Agadah and he is fitting it in a way, and these are Wiesel's terms, the Agadah Miyashevet has a unique effect upon the Torah. This can be called thickening. Thickening means it does not divert the plot. The plot is going from point A to point B. The Agadah HaMiyashevet Pshuto Shel Mikra means it adds texture, depth to the plot. It doesn't divert it. So when I know that Cham castrated his father, it adds a detail to the story that's interesting, but it doesn't divert the story in any way. No? It doesn't introduce new characters. It doesn't introduce new meaning, new reasons why, right? It's just new facts. It's a thicker story. His argument is that Rashi is called Parshandata in that he keeps the text, keeping the text in the sense of the words and in the sense of the context, but he adds those agadot which deepen the meaning. Now, I think it's a nice, it's an elegant point. There is a huge dispute, ladies and gentlemen, among commentators on Rashi about what exactly Rashi does when he quotes Midrashim. One view is, and Nechama Leibowitz at the back of her volume on Shmot, Nechama Zecharon Olavracha has this, she quotes that there are certain commentators who understand that Rashi only quotes Midrashim that somehow connect to Pshuto Shel Mikra, like what you were saying before, if there's some problem in the text, Rashi quotes it. Rashi quotes a Midrash. But he won't quote a Midrash just for the sake of it. Others, however, the Be'er Yitzchak, right, the Re'im, the Mizrahi, says that Rashi's only giving Pshuto Shel Mikra. And the Be'er Yitzchak says no. Rashi is giving other information. Now, the question over here, the way I phrase it on the sheet, is Rashi an exegete or an educator? No? Exegete means that Rashi is explaining the text. That's his job. Educator means that Rashi's job is not just to explain text, but to give you lots of information. And
both.
Rashi,
He's doing both.
What?
He's doing both.
So it could be both, but if your job is to be an educator, so that means that you're going to be less bound by problems in the text. The real question is, does Rashi ever quote Midrashim that do not fit into the text? Nechama Leibowitz, Zichrona Levracha, contends that every single time Rashi quotes a Midrash, Rashi is dealing with a problem in the text. And the way Nechama would teach is she would begin a class and she'd say, okay, here's the Rashi. What's bothering Rashi? No? This is like, it sounds like, I know, we hated this in 7th and 8th grade. No, Rashi just did this to us. But that is her approach. Rashi would not say anything if there's nothing bothering him. There's got to be some problem in the text, some hook. That's her approach. However, others contend that Rashi's job is not as an exegete, but as an educator. And Rashi wants to bring out certain moral lessons for us. And he'll quote Midrashim because there's an important moral I want to teach. I'm a Rebbe. By the way, we know Rashi as Rabban Shel Yisrael, as the Rebbe, as the teacher, no? We don't know Rashi as a Bible professor. We don't. The Rashi who we know and love is the Rebbe. I remember Rabbi Wurzberger once gave a sermon, and the sermon was that Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses. Moses is not a great liberator. He's not an emancipator. He's a Rebbe. I remember that like, as a kid. It was searing in my mind. Moshe Rabbeinu is a Rebbe. Rashi's a teacher, a Rebbe. That's how we know it. And usually Rebbeim are not there only to teach a text. Professors are there to only teach a text. Rebbeim are there to give morals and values. But Nechama contends, based on this Rashi, that Rashi says, Ani lo bati ela lepshuto shel mikra, that Rashi means it. And whenever Rashi will quote a midrash, it's because there's a problem. Okay? Now, le'umat zeh, the other side is, whoa, Rashi. Sometimes you quote midrashim that don't seem to be answering the problem. Let me give you an example. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu is in Midian, right? He runs away because they're out to kill him. And then Moshe Rabbeinu comes back. And the Torah says that when he's coming back to Mitzrayim, Vayakivem al hachamar, that they're riding on a donkey. So Rashi comments, not stamaz a donkey. Oh, not an ordinary donkey. Rashi quotes in the Pirkei Der Blazer that this is the same donkey that Avram Avinu rode to the Akedah, and it's the same donkey that Melech HaMashiach is going to ride, La'asad Lavo, Ani, V'rochev al-Hachamor, it's the Zobah Hamor, this is a donkey that has incredible longevity, says Rashi. Right? This is the same donkey. That's what Rashi says. Now, one second. What's Rashi doing with that? Is there any textual problem that Rashi is addressing? So, in Grossman's book on Rashi, he says, come on, there's no problem. Obviously, what Rashi is doing is Rashi is a teacher. It's pedagogy. Rashi feels that this event, when Moshe is returning to Mitzrayim, is coming about because we had a great forefather called Avram Avinu who did his great things. And it's setting the table for Mashiach that's going to come later on. And therefore, that's why Rashi puts it in. Because this is a momentous event in history where Moshe comes back to Egypt. But that's a moral lesson. That's not a textual lesson. No? Is there any... Grossman assumes that there is no textual lesson from that Rashi. And Grossman contends in this book, page 89, 90, etc., that Rashi's an educator. He argued, can you imagine doing this? He's arguing on the Chama label. It's the chutzpah. Right? He's arguing on the Chama. He says, no, Rashi's an educator, and he brings this medrash. Now, what's amazing about Grossman, usually you don't get a Maramakonis, but Grossman didn't read the Sichas of the Rebbe. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, he just had his Yartzei, no? Mm-hmm. We believe he's dead. Okay? In Mount Sinai Jewish Center, we believe the Rebbe is no longer alive. I was at the funeral. I can tell you he's dead. Well, actually, it doesn't prove very much. I believe the Rebbe is dead. I'll say it like this. So now the Rebbe has an interesting theory about Rashi on Chumash. The Rebbe believes that Rashi on Chumash has an intended audience of a 5-year-old boy or girl. The child who's beginning to learn Chumash for the first time. Remember, the Mishnah in Avos says, Ben Chamesh LaMikra. 5-year-olds start learning Chumash. No? So, the Rebbe says that Rashi only gives those commentaries that will answer questions that 5-year-olds will ask. And he developed this. The Rebbe, every Shabbos, would speak 8 times. And one of his sichot was about Rashi al HaTorah. And now there's a Lubavitcher Chumash that was done by Chaim Miller. It's called the Gutnik edition of Chumash. No? And it's based on the Rebbe's commentary. And the Rebbe, with his 5-year-old child in mind, says that's what Rashi's focused on. And the Rebbe notes that if you go through the Pesukim there in Shmos, the Pesukim there in Shmos say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants Moshe Rabbeinu to go to Midian. Moshe Rabbeinu says, why should I go? Who am I? What am I? So God says, no, Moshe, you should go. And Moshe still is pestering God. He says, I don't want to go. Why should I go? And the way you could read the Pesukim, says the Rebbe, is that Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, you know what? First of all, why should I go? Second of all, it only makes sense for me to go to Mitzrayim if I'm going to be the ultimate redeemer of the Jewish people, if I'm going to be the Mashiach. So God tells Moshe, first of all, Avram Avinu, right, was chosen for no reason. Right? Why was Avram Avinu chosen? No reason.
He destroyed the idols
in some midrashim. Okay, whatever. But we don't know why Avram is chosen. So God says, Moshe, just like Avram is chosen, you're chosen. And in terms of Mashiach, yeah, you're not going to be Mashiach, but the same donkey for Avram and the same donkey for Mashiach is going to be your donkey. Right? And that answers Moshe's questions. In other words, says the Rebbe, if you're a 5-year-old child, right, we sometimes don't ask questions on the Chumash because we know the story. But the little kid hearing the story for the first time say, one second, Moshe asked, why should I go? And God never answered him. So says the Rebbe, no, God is answering. God is saying, this is the donkey. And that's the answer. The answer is, the same donkey of Avram is the donkey of Mashiach, etc. Now, again, it's a drasha. But the Rebbe consistently felt that Rashi is addressing the 5-year-old child. We'll talk about this more in the second
thing. For instance, when Rashi says, all the beginning, why does the Torah begin with a Chumash as Elohim? It presupposes the knowledge of Chumash before you begin.
So a few times Rashi will do that. Yes. Generally speaking, Rashi doesn't. But you could imagine a little kid learning Chumash for the first time and asking, why do I need to know this? What are the rules that emerge? Right? Can't you imagine a kid saying, like, why do I need to know this?
I love the story.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, or maybe the kid... I don't know. I mean, the Rebbe's theory, I think, has some weaknesses in it. I'm not going to say... But let's just take it apart a little bit more. We have a question. Is Rashi an exegete, like Nechama says, or an educator, like Avram Grossman says? No? So machlokas among the Mefarshim on Rashi, the classical Mefarshim, machlokas in the Mizrahi, and the Be'er Yitzchak. Right? That's what Nechama points out. This machlokas should also depend on who is the intended audience. If you want to learn Rashi the way Nechama Leibowitz wants to learn Rashi, which is that Rashi is only sensitive to problems, often the problems that Rashi is sensitive to are very sophisticated problems. And those types of problems are not problems for a 5-year-old. No? If, however, Rashi is written for the 5-year-old, so then perspective of an educator of also giving you enough information that the story is a little more exciting, enough information that will give you proper emuna, yirashamayim, and values, that you could hear why certain things, right? From the educator's perspective, you're not only bothered by problems in text. And for that 5-year-old child, you're going to add stuff, right? Because as an educator, you add stuff, right? The exegesis approach to Rashi cannot be focused on the 5-year-old. The educator approach can be focused on the 5-year-old. Okay, a few other points I just want to make about Rashi. Rashi, in his introduction to Shir HaShirim, also gives you a brief methodological approach where Rashi speaks about Pshuto Shel Mikra. And then the last thing to talk about is the Rashbam in Bereishis Lamed Zayin. The Rashbam over there talks about how he's learning with his grandfather. And again, you can read it in English. And he says, right, the last three lines in the Hebrew, V'gam Rabbeinu Shlomo Avi Imi Me'ir Enei Golab Shapirish Torah Nevi Muksuvim Nosan Lev Lafarish Pshuto Shamikra V'afan Yishmur B'Remeir Chasano Nis V'kachti Imo Ulefanav V'hodali She'ilu Hayalo Pnai Hayatzarich Lasos Perishim Acharim Lofi HaPashtos HaMizchadshim B'chol Yom. Rashi is quoted by his grandson, by the Rashbam, as saying that if I would have a chance, I would redo my commentary according to the new pshats that are developing every day. In other words, the Rashbam is saying that my grandfather endorsed, Rashbam is a Pashtun, is simple meaning. Should I say my grandfather endorsed my approach to Chumash, and later on in life he said if he'd have a chance, he would write a new commentary. Right? According to the Pshat, there's Mischadesh B'chol Yom. Now, a few things to be said. One, do we take the Rashbam seriously? This is a little bit self-congratulatory. No? Did Rashi really feel that his commentary is not based on Pshat enough? Very hard to know. This is all very, very hard to know. The part of the question is also, right, how much do you view Rashi as being an exegete? Right? If Rashi was a complete exegete already, so then what is the Rashbam getting at? But if Rashi is more of an educator, so then I don't know. Now, when Rashi writes in a few places that there are many different midrashim, the Chama Leibowitz understands in each case, when Rashi says this, and I give you a case over here in Shmos Yud Gimel, when Rashi says it in many midrashim, that's because Rashi is bothered by a problem in the text. The other approach is saying that Rashi is a teacher, and Rashi says, yeah, look at the midrash over there. How come you don't want to quote it? Well, maybe because it was too long. I don't know. But according to the other approach, it's harder to understand why Rashi would sometimes say, oh, there are many midrashim. What does that do for me? Right? You should quote. If you're an educator, you should quote everything. Okay. Again, there's much more that we can speak about in terms of Rashi, but I think next week I want to talk a little bit more about Rashi on Chumash and maybe talk about Rashi on Navi. Is Rashi on Navi the same as Rashi on Chumash or different? And there's much more to say, obviously. I thank you all for coming and have a good night.